The House Committee on Education will come to order. Although you were all very orderly, it was very quiet before the gavel hit. That's unusual. It's 1:30 p.m. on Monday, February 24th. This is the House Education Committee. If you have a telephone with you, a cell phone, a PDA, please turn it all the way off. If you just put it on silent or vibrate, it interrupts with the signals and makes it hard for people that are listening on the internet or in another hearing room and for the recording for the record later. And hopefully the hearing will be interesting enough that you wouldn't want to know who was calling you on your phone anyway.
Well, and it could accelerate a Toyota.
And it could accelerate a Toyota? And that would be bad. And please leave your cars in the parking lot and not in the room. So I will open an informational hearing on the practices of the All Prep Academies. Colleagues, what we are doing today is learning a little bit more.
You woke us up.
Yeah. I'm a little shaky today, and so the goal would be that it doesn't. We are holding an informational hearing today in regards to a letter that was sent out by the Department of Education to a number of school districts about some concerns raised about the practices of a particular family of charter schools called the All Prep Academy. This is the same organization that we were talking about in terms of reimbursement of students and what's reimbursement and do you reimburse the third-party provider or do you reimburse the parent. This is not a hearing. I've been asked to make clear that has anything to do with the Oregon Virtual Academy or the Oregon Connections Academy. This is simply about the All Prep Academies. And the point of today is to learn a little bit more about those reimbursement practices that we talked about and also about some concerns that have been raised about the illegal transfer of students from one school to another without the knowledge of their parents and concerns about financial irregularities and alleged management issues. And to outline those allegations and concerns, I would start by inviting up Morgan Allen and Cindy Hunt from ODE, who have been in communication with districts, and a number of districts were sending materials back that I believe you received just 2 days ago. But as you know, we're under the wire, and this is blessed day we can have this hearing, so we appreciate your working quickly to be able to start sharing that information with us and with the general public that is very concerned about how we spend our state school fund dollars.
Thank you, Chair Gelster, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen, Department of Ed, and Cindy Hunt is joining me and will be speaking as well. We know time is short, so we're going to try to provide a quick frame and background information for the committee, and then we'll be available at the end of the hearing to come back up and answer any questions and issues that may arise. So to get started, the department had many community members and education stakeholders shared information with our charter school and legal staff starting in 2009 and continuing through 2010 that raised governance and operational questions regarding the All Prep Ed Choices organization. And as you know, the department crafted a letter of inquiry to the six school districts, which are Baker, Burns, Estacada, Marcola, Sheridan, and Sisters, that sponsor these school districts managed by the Ed Choices All Prep organization. We've provided copies of those letters to the committee. The intent of the letter was to remind school districts of their legal responsibility to ensure that the charter schools that they sponsor are complying with all the applicable statutes and rules and to correct any inappropriate practices. Ultimately, our goal with the letter was to provide some additional clarity to these school districts regarding the oversight of these schools. And as you just mentioned, Chair Gelster, the six school districts were asked to respond to the department by February 22nd, and we're pleased to report that all six school districts have submitted their responses, and all appearances are that the school districts have done great due diligence to look into the matters that we raised. So before we talk a little bit about the responses, which we've also provided to the committee as well, I'm going to ask Ms. Hunt to outline the questions that we asked in the letter.
Cindy Hunt, Legal Affairs Coordinator, Department of Education. So the way that we came to the letter is that the department doesn't necessarily have direct authority, for example, to terminate a charter of a school or to directly order a charter to do something. But what we can do is we can talk to the districts who do manage these schools and do hold charter contracts with the schools about illegal improprieties that we see. And so that's why, another reason why we chose the format of the letter to communicate to the districts. So the issues that we raised in the letter, the first of those issues was around transferring of students without the students' or parents' knowledge in between schools. We'd received information from one district in particular that as many as 100 students had been transferred overnight without their knowledge. Now, we'd also received some information from a number of other districts that individual students had been transferred around without parent knowledge. Where this becomes a problem is because in charter school law, it says that student enrollment is voluntary in a school. So if for example, the best example I can think of is that if in one night you go to sleep in your house, and in the middle of the night I take you and I move you to my house, but I don't tell you, that's not voluntary. Even if the next day I tell you where you're at and it's a really nice house, it's still not voluntary. So even though the law doesn't specifically talk about parental permission, one of the key components to being voluntary is that you know it's actually happened. Now, where this raises other issues is that, for example, a parent doesn't know then where to complain to, you know, if they have an issue with their school. They don't know which district it's in. It also raises issues under student records, special education when you do this, because, for example, the resident district of this student needs to have a relationship with both the sponsoring district and the school around providing special education to these students. So it's actually a very big issue and very serious. So that's several of the reasons that we highlighted this in the letter and, frankly, the first issue that we highlighted. The other issue that it raises, too, is that if the sponsoring districts don't have knowledge of this, it may impact the way that they are claiming ADM under the state school fund for these students if they don't know that they're no longer in their district. So, as I said, this is a very serious issue. Another issue that we highlighted was that we have the so-called 50% attendance provision. I think this committee has heard a bit about this. We had concerns that these schools were not counting their students appropriately. We had information that, for example, they were counting half-time students as full-time students, which isn't allowed either under the statute or the rule. And so we wanted the districts to really look at the way that the schools were calculating how they were counting their students for purposes of adhering to this law, because all of these schools do offer online courses, so the 50% provision applies to all of them. We also had information that student enrollment accounting practices were not following the ADM protocols. For example, that students were claimed before the charters were entered into in some cases. Was one example. Also, the example of the transferring the students also has implications for ADM reporting, and the reason is because you claim ADM for students you're providing educational services to. There was some information that was in question as far as who was providing the educational services actually to the students. Another issue was a lack of operational presence within the sponsoring district boundaries. A charter school is supposed to be located in its sponsoring district. Now, the statute doesn't say what does it mean to be located, but some of the things you would expect is a business office to be open, maybe a place a parent could go to for student records or to complain or to talk to someone about their school. And this one came about because we had received information about this, and one of our staff did do a drop-in visit, and the office of the school was closed at 1:30 during the week. So this was kind of a concern for us as well. Two or more charter schools governed by one charter agreement. The law clearly states that you have one charter agreement, one school. We had received information that this might have been going on. The merging of charter schools. The law doesn't allow schools to be merged. There's a process. This also implicated different assets that these schools may have been retaining that should have gone to the State Board of Ed and been distributed to other schools. So this had implications also for student enrollment and other things. And then also improperly commingling of funds between the schools. Each of these schools are separate legal entities, but we did have information about them transferring funds around. And so this was an issue that we wanted to highlight. And then the final issue is that this was not an issue so much for the schools but for the districts. We'd received some information that the districts had been encouraged to not pass on the requisite amount of the portion of the state school funding dollars that should have been going back to the other resident districts, that basically they're being encouraged to violate the law. So we wanted to be very clear that this is a requirement under law and that the districts needed to correct that. So those are the issues that we highlighted in the letter and asked for all of the districts to look into and provide us a response.
And Chair Gelser, as you noted, and as I noted earlier, we asked for those responses back by this Monday. So we have not even had most of those responses in our possession for 48 hours, but we have had the opportunity to briefly review the responses. And our goal is to, you know, over probably the next few weeks, by the end of March, essentially issue some findings and work with the districts to get more information. What we can say today generally is that the letters do confirm and acknowledge that there were some incorrect practices occurring, particularly around the transfer of students. We are pleased to report it, and you'll note this in the letters, that I believe all six of the school districts have indicated that they have or are taking immediate steps to correct these deficiencies in procedure. And I think it would also be fair to note that we appreciate that all six school districts have been very cooperative and forthcoming in their responses and answering our questions. Ultimately, our goal in sending these letters was to ensure that charter schools and districts are in compliance with the law. And, you know, upon quick reflection, our opinion is that All Prep needs to improve communication with the districts that sponsor their charter schools and work with their districts to put additional controls in place so these practices do not continue. And we see indications that is already happening or happening in all six of these school districts. So we're pleased to report that. So we'll stop there. We'd be happy to answer any questions now, and we'll be here through the hearing to come up and address anything that comes up during the hearing.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I think you've answered partially part of my question, because the first question I have is relative to contractual, and then it revolves around training. Are the districts trained on charter law so that they are able to respond and have an appropriate contract to meet the needs that are required by law? And secondly, are the charters, schools, are they participating in a training program that shows them what their liabilities are, and so on and so forth? Is that big enough?
Representative M. Orman, Chair Gelser, as far as training goes, there are multiple training opportunities available to both districts and schools. Let me give you one example. There was the COSA conference that was last June, and the Department of Education, in conjunction with the OSBA, presented a seminar to both school districts and charter schools at the same time. There's a whole charter school conference going on tomorrow and the next day that multiple districts and charter schools will be attending that will address, you know, some of the issues in the letter and other issues. So there's a lot of, you know, different training opportunities that they do have.
And additionally, Representative Van Orman, the department does have staff that specialize in charter schools that provide ongoing answers to questions and technical assistance. And I think if you haven't had an opportunity to review the responses from the districts, you'll note that in many of the districts they reference documents produced by the department, or specifically emails or other documents that Ms. Hunt and others at our agency have produced to help clarify the 50% rule.
And follow up. Then on the contractual, knowing from experience that there are some attorneys who know the business that you're in and there are some attorneys that don't. So are there attorneys that the districts could use or the charter schools could use that definitely know this law?
Representative Van Orman, I think the short answer is yes. I mean, most of the school districts have their own counsel, or, you know, have counsel through the ESD. Also, you know, OSBA and COSA, and frankly the department, can provide, you know, answers to those types of questions if they get into a position where they don't know the answer or there's some confusion. So,
okay. Thanks.
Representative Dimbro.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. The first has to do with how ADMW gets calculated for this kind of thing. I think that's been one of the questions that's out there. When you have a student who's taking one or more online courses, they're counted as a partial ADMW or a full ADMW. Perhaps you could just explain that to us.
Yeah, Chair Gelser, Representative Dembro, I think part of the confusion generally that's out there is that there's the collection of ADMW and state school fund dollars for students who are enrolled in the charter school. But then there's the 50% provision, and that's where we get more part-time students. But that's kind of a separate issue. So focusing on first the ADMW issue, so full-time students who are receiving all of their education online would be considered to be a full ADM under our funding formula. And then they would get the percentage from their sponsoring districts as specified in their charter agreement, which in state law is a minimum of 80% for K-8 and 95% for high school kids. So then when we start looking at the 50% provision, that's when we start getting into more part-time kind of situations. And some of the letters, I think, highlight this, is that then that becomes more of an issue of what's the agreement between the school district and the particular school. So for purposes of ADM, if you had a part-time student who is just enrolled in the charter school, then they would only get a partial ADM count, for example. But if, for example, a student was attending, was enrolled in a regular school district who was purchasing services from the charter school, then the school district may claim them as full-time, and they may, by contract, send over a certain amount of money to the charter school for those services. Does that clarify and answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Can you follow?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
So, if you had my staff assistant talked to some people in my district who were using All Prep in the combination with Village Home, and they what was reported to us was that their child was online 2 or 3 hours a day, and then was also taking classes at Village Home at the parents' expense, I think, for part of it. All but the amount that was refunded to them. So how would the ADMW be calculated there, where, you know, the All Prep part of it was just, you know, one piece of their instruction?
Chair Gelser, Representative Dembro, my understanding from the prior bill that was in front of this committee was that the relationship, to remind everyone, was that All Prep had an arrangement with the parents whereby they were reimbursing the parents for tuition amounts for educational services the parents were receiving from Village Home, for example. Under that situation, I'm not sure how All Prep was claiming those students, but normally, for example, a charter school is supposed to offer a comprehensive education to its students. Now, it can do that in a number of ways. It can have classrooms, you know, with teachers. They can have online providers. They can also contract to provide those educational opportunities, perhaps with a school district or a community college. Those are all allowed. And then they can claim, you know, appropriate ADM for that. As I said, I'm not sure how All Prep was claiming those students exactly. We are waiting for example, the audits to come back for the All Prep schools. All those are late this year, so we're waiting for that, and that might shed some illumination for us on that.
Okay. And
one more follow-up?
Yes. Actually, this isn't a follow-up. This is another line. It has to do with the issue of transfer. So, why would a school move students around? Would that be to get the 50-50 residency requirement to work? Or, I mean, is that the assumption?
Well, Representative Dembro, I think that's our assumption as to why the students would be transferred, to balance out the various schools in the All Prep system, if you will, to make sure that they're all meeting the 50% rule. But, you know, those are some questions, follow-up questions we need to ask and get clarification on.
And we'll have Mr. King in a little while, so that would be a good question for him. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How did the department become aware of these concerns? Where did they originate? Was it one of the districts that were concerned about ADMW loss? Or
Chair Gelser, Representative Huffman, it was from a variety of sources, to be honest. I mean, we get a number of calls, anything from, like, school district personnel who might call and say, you know, help us to understand this 50% provision. Here's what we're thinking about doing. Is that correct? Kind of a thing. We also get calls from parents, for example, with concerns. And sometimes, you know, when you start to research those concerns, you may discover things. In kind of in direct answer to your question, I would say, you know, from parents, district personnel, concerned citizens, I guess, is kind of another category that I would put that into. And so I think what started as, you know, a number of questions, you know, asking for maybe technical assistance or this is what's going on or and that kind of thing. But then in around, I think it was November or December, we had some, in writing, some things filed with us that was more of a formal complaint, actually, about the schools. And in addition to one of the districts filing a number of questions and raising some definitely some concerns about the schools. And that's really what gave rise very significantly to the timing of the letter.
So potential legitimate concerns, it's quite often just happen chance that the department finds out that you need to pursue a line of questions to see if something is really going on. Is there any way of knowing ahead of the curve? Or is it just complaint-based and that's pretty much the way it works?
Yeah, Chair Gelser, Representative Huffman, the charter schools are supposed to file, for example, their charters with us. And we do review those on some level. And occasionally, you know, we do see issues in there that we might talk to the charter and the sponsor about if we see, you know, things that are illegal or just really not appropriate. So that's one way that we do get some information. But some of it, you know, for example, with parents, when a parent calls for a complaint, what we typically do is we try to ascertain which school the child is in. Normally that's pretty obvious. And which district. And then we try to refer them, you know, to work that out. And so part of the information we got is in, like, researching that and trying to ascertain which school those kids were in. And the parents would say, well, I think we're in this school. And then we would look and see where they were being claimed. And, in fact, they were in a different school. So that's what raised some of the issues for us.
Representative Springer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Morgan and Cindy. I guess maybe a question for you, and you might know with the witness list. Are there any of the sponsoring school district administrators here?
Yes.
Okay, great, because I want to hear from them. I sat on a school board, and we had an agreement with a charter school, and we were 50% responsible and 50% part of the deal, so we didn't get to say this is a charter school, and so I'm anxious to hear from them. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the commingling of funds. Which district was that?
Which district?
Yeah.
Representative Springer, Chair Gelser, I believe that was mentioned in the sister school district letter to us specifically.
Okay.
But there is some other evidence out there that may, you know, implicate some other districts as well. So, and like I said, we're waiting for the first audit reports to come back. So part of this, we may get more information once we see that, too, on some of the funding pieces. And certainly some of the districts in their responses are also waiting for those audit reports to come back and, you know, so that they can look at those.
Okay. Follow up, please. Thank you. The reason I was asking is I'm looking at a couple of the districts here and their response letters, and there doesn't seem to be, at least initially here, commingling of funds of at least a couple of them. And there's, as you know, we have tons of letters here that
yes.
you've sent us, which is great. So that's why I want to, because that's a big deal to folks. When they hear commingling funds, you know, red lights go off and the flags go up. And so I want to be very careful as we discuss that and that we're fairly specific.
Absolutely. And Representative Springer, that's why we are speaking somewhat generically today. Again, we haven't had the responses long enough, and we need to do some follow-up, and we don't want to inappropriately implicate anybody at this point. So,
And that was one of the challenges, I think, also with the letter, is that normally when we send one of these letters out, it would be to one school and one district, and it would probably be even more precise. But in this case, because it involved multiple districts and multiple schools, we were seeing patterns of practice. So it's not as precise, I think, or as pointed to a particular district as it normally would be, because these schools stretch across multiple districts and the practices that we were seeing were implicating multiple schools.
Thank you. I think one last follow-up. So at this point, when we're talking about commingling of funds, we don't have an audit report or anything to substantiate that.
Right.
Okay.
That's correct.
And along this line of questioning and commingling of funds, is commingling of funds the same as using ADM from one school to benefit another school, even if temporarily? Is that commingling?
Chair Gelser, potentially, or it's transferring around other funds such as grant funds or any other funds that are kind of available to the school. And not having a clear trail also about doing that. You know, because like I said, a charter school can contract. You know, they can contract with each other or they can share staff. Those kinds of things are allowed. But when you don't have a clear path or clear agreements or a clear accounting mechanism to back that up, that's when concerns are raised.
Mm-hmm. So as a follow-up, and I'll ask Mr. King, too, when he has the opportunity to come up, but I was looking at the adopted minutes of the board meeting. The first thing that was interesting to me was the Sisters Web Academy, the SWECA board, appears to be the same as the SCAFA board, so two distinct entities with one single board. But in the minutes, it says, Tim stated, Ed moved to have Ed Choices take over that aspect. Terry seconded and all approved. Tim stated that a benefit of this is that they can move money between the schools if one is in need. Tim stated that should SCAFA go down as far as 25 students, this could help tremendously. Ed asked if this had been done within other schools in the Ed Choices umbrella. Terry asked if all the monies would be internal money and not external. Tim stated that it was all internal. Under what part of Oregon law would that currently be legal to temporarily move money from one school that's doing okay to one that's got a declining enrollment?
And Chair Gelser, I'm not an expert in accounting, but I think that's one area. There's accounting standards that all of these schools need to meet, so that's one area that we would look at. Another area that implicates is that a number of these schools have received federal grants, which are for very specific purposes for that school, and they're not necessarily for another school within, you know, the unit. So that would be another area that this would implicate. So those are a couple that, you know.
And then just one follow-up on that. I know Representative Innerman's in the queue, and we've got a lot of people to move through still.
I'll be patient.
Is it typical? Are there other public schools in the state that have a board that is one board for two schools? And when people do that, how do they manage the inherent conflict between advocating for the fiscal needs of a particular school if they're responsible for two separate and distinct schools?
Chair Gelser, I assume what you're asking is if there's one board for two charter schools rather than just two public schools, which, you know, there is. But, I believe there's a, you know, off the top of my head, I cannot think of any, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't exist. It is allowed to have one board for multiple schools. Different people have asked us about that for technical assistance. We've said, you know, sometimes that can get difficult because of conflicts, or you may, you know, ideally want to draw your board from your community where your school is, so it makes it difficult if you're in multiple communities. So there are some pretty significant disadvantages. But it is allowed, I mean, under law to do that. But I think you saw in the sister situation that it looks like at least two of the schools, if not three, actually were under one board.
Thank you. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. So this is, again, about the contractual arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
That my presumption is these are annual contracts that are let and reviewed every year. Is that correct?
Representative Van Orman, Chair Gelser, they're not necessarily annual contracts. They can be, I don't have the years right in front of me, but they can be as much as 10 years if a school has been in existence for a while. At the department, we have a couple of state-sponsored schools. Our charter agreements are for 3 years initially, and then when they get renewed, they're for another 3 years. I think some of the contracts in question with the All-Prep, I think, are for 5 years. So the number of years can actually range. They are supposed to annually review the charter schools, though they being the sponsor district. And part of that review should be, you know, are they adhering to the particular charter agreement that they have in other areas of the law?
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So it, the, okay, so my understanding is that each district can negotiate their own contract. What if they choose to, what if in the, they've got a five-year contract and they decide that based on evidence that they've gathered that they don't want to continue this contract? It depends on what the contract says for them to get out, right?
Yeah, Chair Gelser, Representative Van Orman, they being the sponsor district has a couple of choices. There's the termination proceedings, and there's six very specific reasons why you can terminate a charter school, and they could proceed under that. That's one option. But then there's also non-renewal of their charter agreement, which comes at the end of the charter, and there's also criteria for that, although it is easier to not renew a charter than to terminate one midway through the contract.
And has anybody terminated or not renewed their contract with All Prep?
Chair Elser, I believe the sister school district has served a notice of intent to terminate, but I think that's the only one. And I believe that notice applies to all three of the schools there. So that may be a good question for them.
Okay.
But I think that's
you.
The only one that's done that.
And I think that's who's next. And we've got the department to come back after we've heard from everyone if people have more questions. Then is there anything else for Mr. Allen and Ms. Hunt at this time?
Quick question.
Springer.
I'm just trying to sort through all this information and then the information that we have in the letters here. Thus far, because I know we're waiting for the audit reports to come in, I have a friend who's a business manager. I know how difficult those can be. She's told me how difficult those can be. And a few other things. What of the complaints, I know we've talked about the moving of the students, what has been substantiated thus far?
Chair Gelser and Representative Springer, the short answer to that is in our initial read, we believe that all six districts had students being moved around, the transfer issue. And there are specific examples of other things happening. One that comes to mind quickly is the Marcola School District, and their response indicated that they were not making the appropriate payments to the resident school district for their share of charter funds, which is one of the questions we asked in the letter. But we will need some time to go through and go through each one individually. And as Ms. Hunt stated, without the audits, some of those questions, the districts have said, we're not able to answer those until we get our audits.
In addition to that, I mean, a lot of this has made the press and that kind of thing, so we're continuing to get information also from third parties as well because of the attention that these schools have gotten. So we're also reviewing all of that information as it comes in.
And so would that be parents that maybe have had an experience that are either saying this was a great experience or I have these further concerns?
Yeah, Chair Gelser, you're correct. Parents, districts, et cetera, you know, who maybe you're contacting just to say, you know, are we doing this right or, you know, this is my concern or whatever. It comes in, like I said, kind of a variety of sources, but we have continued to gather information even after these letters went out.
And one final question before you go. Have there been any other charter school providers in Oregon that have, where this level of concern has come forward about the inappropriate transfer of students without their knowledge or the knowledge of their parents or commingling of funds?
Chair Gelser, not the transferring of students that I know of, because most charter schools, it's only one entity, so they don't necessarily transfer kids back and forth. When you ask, you know, at this level of concern, there was a charter school a number of years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that was doing some illegalities, and different illegalities than what's highlighted here in the letter. But that rose to such a significant level that the department did withhold state school fund dollars from their school district. So it was quite significant. So these are not, you know, the first charter schools to receive these kinds of letters in response to your question.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And so next we have up, and my understanding is they want to come separately. We've got board members and the superintendent of the sisters school district. Okay. So Glenn Laskin, who's the sister school board vice chair, and Jeff Smith, the sister school board member. And because we're short on time, I leave it all up to you if your superintendent wants to join you or come later.
I've probably come up separately because we're somewhat at odds with our superintendent over this, so we'll just speak on behalf of the board.
Well, and if you could start your testimony by stating your name for the record, that would be great.
Great. My name is Glenn Laskin, and I'm the board vice chair
I'm Jeff Smith, and I'm a tenured member of our board.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Chair Gessler. I'll begin by just giving a brief historical background that may have given some insight into how this all came about. We opened up two charter schools in our district. 2.5 years ago, the Fine Arts Academy called SCAFA, and then a year and a half ago, Tim Kim came to us and opened the Webb Academy in our school district. So those are two separate charter schools with somewhat different problems. We had problems from the onset with the SCAFA in terms of having a number of students necessary to have a charter school. They were below their 25. They got a waiver, I believe, the first year, and they've been below 25 ever since. And so when Tim came and opened up the Webb Academy, it came to our attention in October of last year that Tim and Allprep had taken over responsibility for managing the Fine Arts Academy also. And that was news to the board. We hadn't been aware that somehow those two boards were merged and that the same person was now managing both academies. We were told at that time that would give him flexibility to be able to make both work. I'm not sure our board would have approved that merger, but it was done, be it as it may. So in October of last year, Tim came forward with a proposal for our board to allow him to sort of change the way the Webb Academy was operating and called it a different name, the All Prep Academy, and was very specific that this was a way to sort of get around and avoid the legislation that had passed regarding Webb Academies. And so he wanted to amend or change what he was doing so he wouldn't have to deal with those statutes. Our board was concerned that this sounded like a fairly significant change in curriculum from what we had approved with the Webb Academy. He wanted to just merge them together. And in fact, one of his proposals at that October meeting was that we just merge the Fine Arts Academy together with the Webb Academy, and then everything would be fine. We had gotten some legal advice from our attorneys before then suggesting that might be illegal, so we declined to just merge the academies together. So he said, all right, then we'll have to close the Fine Arts Academy completely, and then we'll work at trying to amend the Webb Academy so it somehow fits within the statute. So we asked him to come back at the next board meeting with a proposal for amending the charter, perhaps, to be something different, because what he was proposing sounded significantly different than the Webb Academy we'd approved a year and a half earlier. That's when things got kind of crazy, because a few days later, after that board meeting, which was on a Wednesday, Sunday night, we received an email from Tim, somewhat punitive, really, saying that because of we were troubled with the direction he was going. He said in his email that he was going to start contacting student families and see if they'd like to transfer to another academy. And he also said in the email that he was going to cap our All-Prep Academy at 40 and do some other things. And then he went on to point out the significant financial impact that's going to have on our school district. So when we got that email on Sunday, Monday, we started looking into things. We found out that within 24 hours of our board meeting that prior Wednesday, he had moved over 100 kids out of our district into some other district. Okay. And then at that time, when we also tried to check online, we were blocked from any access to the financials of the Webb Academy at that time. And that was when we also started looking online and found the minutes that you were already talking about from their board, indicating that by merging things together, they could move funds around as needed. That seemed fishy to us. And also one of the minutes, which has been provided, I believe, from Wednesday, February 11th, 2009, Tim was quoted in their minutes as stating he would lie if necessary to get around the requirements. So it seemed odd to us that that would be in posted minutes. So it raised some concerns to us. Okay, what's going on? So we called him in for a meeting the next several days with our attorney and him and his attorney, and we asked him, did you get consent from 100 parents to move the kids? And his first answer was, yes, we did. Now, I've done a lot of campaigning for the school district for bonds and things. I've tried to call people, and you can't reach 100 people in 24 hours. I asked him that, and he said, well, we had lots of lieutenants. They were all working on busy like crazy. Do you have any documentation, lists, check marks, anything in writing? No, we'll get back to you on that. Then the next meeting we have, within a few weeks later, his attorney says, well, we've figured out that we don't need consent, and so we just did it. So, you know, there were enough concerns going on in terms of what we weren't getting financial information, we were getting misinformation, that we wanted to get
guidance from ODE, so we sent a letter to ODE. One of the other things that was going on with the Fine Arts Academy is they told us, Tim told us, oh yes, they had a waiver to be below the 25 rule. Well, we checked with the state and they did not have a waiver, so that wasn't accurate. So that month, Tim had told us that his assessment of the Fine Arts Academy was that they'd never be able to support more than 25 kids in this community. And yet, in that same week, in the documentation sent to the state requesting a waiver, he predicted that they would have 35 to 38 kids by the end of the year. And so there were just too many things going on that seemed fishy to us. It just seemed inconsistent or inaccurate or what was going on. And we're well aware that if it were to turn out that somehow something improper was happening in our district and a charter we were sponsoring, our district would be responsible. We would be essentially fined by the Department of Education with money being withheld from us. So for that reason, we sent a letter to ODE, I believe in October or November, raising these concerns. And the first response we got back from Phyllis was essentially saying, here are the various statutes that apply. This is the December 28th letter. From Phyllis Kyle. Here are the various statutes that apply. Good luck, and you know, let us know if you have any other questions. So we did not get any guidance in terms of this is right or this is wrong or how illegal. They had no guidance whatsoever. So we did the only thing we thought we could do to protect ourselves, which is we gave notice to terminate our contract with them. We'd already given notice to terminate the Fine Arts Academy because they were below 25. We thought the waiver was based on misinformation. Their financials didn't make sense. Their financials that they gave to us showing how they could be viable assumed transfers of money from the other academy, which we didn't think was legal.
And I'm going to have to ask you to summarize a little bit. We all have to be back on the floor at 2:45.
So I'm about sure. Done. So actually, we're up to speed now. We sent the letter, ODE sent an initial letter saying they weren't going to get involved. And then the second letter came, which is the one that you have, saying, oh, wait a minute, now we have some problems. And that's where we are. Our attorneys have responded to that, giving as much information as we can. But as a district, we felt like we were sort of hamstrung in terms of not knowing what to do, not knowing what's legal or illegal. It looked bad to us, and so we took the strongest measure we could, which is to terminate our relationship with All Prep altogether. And that's pretty much where we are.
Are there any questions for this panel before we've got one other person to bring up before Mr. King?
I just have one.
Yes,
Senator
Norman.
Now, I want to be sure that this is what I heard. DOE decided not to get involved.
I don't want to characterize that. I had the letter from December 28th, and I don't want to make any characterizations about DOE, but their first response to us from December 28th from Phil Skyle just listed the applicable statutes, and it did not offer an opinion as to the propriety or impropriety of any of the actions. So I don't want to cast aspersions. This letter didn't tell us what to do, is all I'm saying.
Thank you.
Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One simple question, I think. When Mr. King, I think it was, allegedly transferred 100 students from one district to another, at what level did that happen? Where are you seeing this taking place?
I believe we went onto our records that next morning and saw that they had been transferred from our district to another district. And our attorney who's here would know which district that was. It was one in the Portland area. But physically, they were gone from our district, according to our records.
And I think in addition, our business manager got a call from a business manager in another district saying, we just got 100 kids. What's happening in Sisters? And we say, we didn't know.
Thank you.
Representative
Ambrose? Just for more clarification, the 100 students that were transferred, how many of them are actually resident of your district or were actually resident of your district?
Probably virtually none.
Okay. And the academy was a hybrid of on-site and virtual, no?
That's open to question. It certainly opened as virtual only. One of the concerns we had when it was presented to us that we're going to become a hybrid was trying to understand how on earth that would work. There was a reference that there would be an aerobics class that kids would gather at, but it didn't make a lot of sense educationally to me, so I don't know what or how this would turn into a hybrid, but it sounded different enough to us that we felt like we needed to have a whole different charter.
Okay. Just a quick follow-up. So aside from the 100 that were transferred, you had how many left in the school? Would have been left, and how many of them were actually resident of the district?
We would have had about 30 or 40 left at that point. point, and again, almost none of them were resident. He was counting kids in our district who were using some of their software as a way to balance off the 50% rule, and we're not very clear about whether that was appropriate either or not, but that's what was happening.
Okay, I see. So they weren't really online students. They were regular students who were doing some online work, and supplemental work, and that was made them considered students of the online charter.
Right, right, for purposes of satisfying the 50% rule.
Right. Thank you.
Representative Springer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of clarification, not for these gentlemen. Going through my calendar here, are we done at 2:30 today?
Or I had been.
I'm dying to hear from Tim King.
Correct. And we also have someone from Harney County. Harney County is a really long drive, so I want to get him up. And then Tim King. I had a schedule to go until 2:45. We're on the floor at 2:45.
Right. Madam Chair, we are caucusing at 2:30.
All right. So we may lose some folks at 2:30. So with that, do you have a question for them?
Really quick question.
Yeah.
When you wrote the letter, what did you expect ODE to do?
I think we were hoping that ODE would give us some guidance as to whether or not it was legal for Tim to transfer these students or not, give us some guidance as to whether or not it was legal or appropriate for the boards to merge or not. Just, is this okay or is it bad? Where is it on the scale?
Well, did you get a call from ODE?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. And I apologize to everyone for the speed. I don't think when we had set this, we had expected it to be signing die day. Hopefully it's signing die day. And so next, quickly, Tim Callahan from Harney County.
I will try to be quick.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Tim Callahan. I live in Harney County. I am not a school board member. I don't represent the school board of Harney County School District Number 3, and I want to make that very clear. When Ms. Hunt talked about people who ODE heard from, I am one of those people. So I guess I fit into one of the concerned citizens categories. I'm a parent of three children. One of them graduated from the high school. Two of them
Mr. Callahan, I'm going to urge you to be as brief as possible. I see we've got your written testimony.
You've got the written testimony. What I want to talk about briefly is I'm here as a concerned citizen, as a taxpayer. I know with public funds come public accountability. My concerns are these. Number one, compliance with the 50% rule. The second concern I have is the oversight mechanism that is in place, or maybe more importantly, is not in place to ensure that there is compliance with the rules regarding virtual online academies. How I got involved in this, very briefly, is I was looking at this from the very beginning. I don't have any gripe. I am not against charter schools. I do have a concern about this virtual online academy, and I have had concerns. And I voiced them with the school board. I voiced them with ODE. I want to read just, and I'll do it very quickly, the last portion of my written testimony. It'll just be the last page. The process of trying to work with the district to determine if oversight is being conducted of the charter school has been a very frustrating process. Last spring, Harney County School District Number 3 reported that 15 students who reside in district attended the Sylvie's River Web Academy during 2008-2009. This fall, that number was increased to 21 out of approximately 250 total students who had attended that school sometime during 08 and 09. Questions were raised at that time by me of how in the world could be in compliance with the 50% rule. The district's response was to communicate to me when I asked that question. They said they need to contact EdChoices to get that information. When I asked how the district monitored compliance, I was told by the district that it was being done verbally. After I submitted a public records request, I found out that my son, who had taken a single online course, was being counted as a full-time in-district FTE student in Sylvie's River Web Academy. I know from looking at that list, there are several more students that are on that list. I also know that the charter school and the school district is counting 51 youth in the Oregon Youth Academy as being full-time FTE in the Sylvie's River Web Academy. The concern I have about that is threefold. Number one, many of those students are 23, 24, and 25 years old. Some of those students have graduated from high school. Some of those youth, have GED. I don't know how they can count all 51. Although represented to the public, and this is how this school is represented, as a money-making proposition, to date it is unclear what the financial impact has been on our school district. It's in my testimony, but I want you to know that our school district fronted Mr. King about $500,000 to start the school district here. It was money that was fronted to him with the assurance that it would be paid back. It's unclear whether all that money has been paid back yet. A bigger concern to me is the financial impact on our district if it is ultimately determined that we have been overcounting in-district FTE and therefore enrolling students from out-of-district and receiving ADM funds that we are not entitled to. Our school district is one that has lowering enrollment. We've taken some terrible financial hits. That is my primary concern, is the accountability of the public funds that are being used.
Thank you. Are there quick questions for Mr. Colhoun? Representative
Huffman. Just a quick comment. Thank you for making the drive over. I know how far it is, so thank you. But wish we could have given you 10 more minutes.
Me too. And for there are a number of people who have driven from far away, Marcola, Sheridan, Estacada. We'll do the best we can. But thank you very much.
Thank
Mr.
You,
King. I think it's important for you to get a chance to tell your side of the story, and we're going to lose some people starting in just a couple minutes and be on the floor in 20 minutes. So with apologies to the others who have come, I think it's really important to give you a chance to come. I'm afraid the clock will run out.
And Madam Chair, are coming up, I want to apologize. I mean, because this is our last day of session. We have a caucus meeting, and some of us have duties that we can't be excused from in that regard. But we do apologize for getting up, and certainly no aspersions, because I think your side of the story is just as important.
Yes, and because I know that some people may be getting up while we are here, I would just like to thank Representative Maurer for his service on this committee, your last day on this committee, and probably the last day on this assembly, and thank you for all that you've contributed.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I will be back. We have some other work to do, right? Interim?
Yes, good point.
Oh.
It's not.
You haven't got rid of me yet.
All right. Oh, darn. Never mind, Barry. Take your nice things back.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Before some of our colleagues have to leave, I want to put on the record that I have put in written writing request for three different speakers since I've been a representative to review how the funding formula in this body does look at these issues, and I've yet to have that addressed, and I want to put that on the record.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome. And Mr. and if you could both state your names for the record, and I turn the floor over to you. There's been a lot of information that's been shared, and your opportunity to provide a response to it.
I'd like to introduce myself for the record. My name is Barbara Smythe. I'm the outside counsel for all the All Prep Academies, and I'm here probably not to serve a lot of purpose, but I am concerned about the process we're seeing today. There's been an hour spent on a great deal of people's opinions and innuendo and things that are opposing the All-Prep schools without an opportunity to investigate the accuracy and completeness of that information. And we have three district superintendents who are here who are supportive, at least three, who are here who are supporting us, and they're not going to have time to speak, and I find that very concerning. And so at this point, I'll let Mr. King go ahead.
Thanks. I need to spend just a minute. I realize time is important here. At least describing for some of you who don't know what it is we do in the governance model. Otherwise, a lot of these answers are just not going to make sense.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, thank you. My name is Tim King, and I'm the director of the All Prep Academies. I'm not the director of SCAFA, but I am the director of the All Prep Academies. The All Prep Academies were designed with the idea, the overriding idea of working on the three R's, and that is relationships, relevance, and rigor. And we take those things very, very seriously. We also take very seriously the charge in ORS 338, and this is probably part of the issue here today, that says we're to take responsible risks to create new, innovative, and more flexible ways of educating children. And that's part of our Bible. That's what we do. We also believe in the next part that says we're to be a research and development of new opportunities, and we should actively pursue that. And we also believe that the rest of the laws are supposed to be interpreted liberally, as it says right there. We do that, and we're pretty serious about it. In short, we believe in innovation. And we're big on innovation. And we innovate. We meet regularly to innovate. We believe our then what we're supposed to be doing is getting results. And then from there, we're supposed
to... Mr. King, you can push the microphone back a little bit, and we'll hear you a little bit better.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. And then from there, our job is to disseminate the information and the programs and the ideas through our districts. The primary ones that we disseminate our information through, as well as our programs, are our sponsor districts. They're certainly not the only ones, but they're the primary ones. And so what we like to do is set up relationships with the districts where we are heavily involved inside the district in terms of our programs. And we think that's part of our job. We think we're supposed to disseminate what we do inside the district, and we're big on that. And I think we're doing it well. The other piece that I don't think has come out that is going to be kind of important is we have two basic types of schools. We have early colleges, which have not been mentioned very much here, even though that's about a third of them. And then we also have the all-prep academies. We believe in the all-prep academies as what's often called the hybrid model, meaning we think there should be face-to-face with a young person as well as online with a young person. And we should blend those in a personalized way, a customized way, meaning that for each child, we should look at them and say, okay, what's best for you? And we should take online and do as much online as we think is best for that young person, as well as face-to-face opportunities. And then what we've been doing is looking for as many cost-effective face-to-face opportunities as we could possibly find that then mix in with our online curriculum. We think each kid deserves to have a personalized system. And that's what we do, and we're pretty serious about that as well. And the goal, the overriding goal, and this is why we have early college academies, the overriding goal is to accelerate the young person through their education so that by the time they get to be a junior or senior in high school, we can enroll them in college classes in our early college academies. And we do that fairly well. We have about 500 kids now enrolled in community colleges throughout the state of Oregon that are in our early college academies. We have a number of kids who we anticipate are going to graduate with an AA degree at the same time they graduate with their high school diploma. And we're pretty proud of that. We push them pretty hard in that regard. We believe that every kid, if possible, we want to get them past a full year in a single year in terms of their education so that they can jet ahead and we can get them further along. These are big things for us. The other big things for us that will help some of this make a little bit more sense is we also develop a fair number of special programs in and around the idea of face-to-face contact time and what's best for the young person. We have an ACT program, which is a service learning program. It's a graduation requirement, mostly done by our juniors. We have a capstone program, which is for our seniors. It's internship or entrepreneurship. We have an AVE program, which I'll put up against any Latino youth education program in the state of Oregon. We have a lot of folks looking at these too. And the reason I'm mentioning these is because they're part of what we start to integrate into the districts that we work with. And that's a big deal to us. We're not just an online school going out just doing online delivery. We try to be very active inside the school districts. And one of the, I'm taking up their time, but one of the things that we'd be excited about is for you to listen to the superintendents in terms of what we're actually doing inside the schools, because that's a big part of how all this works. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
And Mr. King, I think that the issue today is less about what you're offering and what the quality of education is. I think that's not what the question is. The question is around some of the administrative practices, and I want to make sure that you have the opportunity. We literally have to be on the floor in 10 minutes, so I want to make sure you have an opportunity to address the issues of, you know, the statements about being able to shift money from one school to another, the allegations from sisters about the transfer of 100 kids. I think it's important for you to have a chance to address that on the record, mm-hmm. if you would like to, before we lose everyone. And I'm guessing that members on the panel would like to hear your responses to Absolutely. Those issues as well.
Okay. Would you like me to go down the issues of the letter then? Would that be appropriate at this time?
I think however you want to use the time to address the letter, or I want to make sure you have the chance to respond to anything you've heard here
sure.
today as well. Is that kind of where your questions are coming from, panel, or do you want to go right into questions?
To me, it doesn't matter what happens now. They have to come back if we're going to do anything meaningful about right. this. There's no time to do anything yep. meaningful here.
That's a concern. Okay. I agree completely. And that makes me a little bit nervous because it's not going to give us time to get through this. Let me go through some of the kind of easy ones first, which we can check off pretty quick. In terms of presence in the district, if you look at all of the responses from the districts, we do have a presence in every single one of our districts. However, we use this as an opportunity to strengthen that significantly. We go from anywhere from Estacada, where we share a facility with what's called Estacada Online, which is a replicated program from what we do actually in the district, another one of those examples, and we share a facility with them there, and that one's manned from 8 to 4 every day. We have some districts where we don't have as much of a presence, and now we've had to make more of a presence. When I say don't have as much of a presence, I mean it's not an 8 to 4 thing. One of the issues that came about from this is, hey, you should post your office hours. Absolutely right. And so now we post all our office hours in all of our places, and everybody seems to be a lot happier as a result of that. Another one is the merging of charter schools. We've never merged charter schools. You can't merge charter schools in this state. It's not possible to do, at least to our knowledge. Each charter school has to have a school ID number from the state. You can't merge those numbers and expect anybody to ever give you any ABM money. It's just not going to happen. And so we don't merge charter schools. We did, originally, when we first set up in two districts, we had charters that were two charters in one single document. We were told immediately that before you go to get an ODE number for your school, that wasn't going to fly. And you can't get an ODE school ID number with two charters on the same document. They just won't give it to you. Nor can you move from phase one to phase two of your grant funding, and both of these had grants, with the same thing on the single document. You can't do it. They won't let you do it. And so in both of those school districts where we were trying that out, it just flat out didn't work. We had to change it. We had to make up two different charters instead of one. It was that simple. There is also the issue in that regard of we do have another charter in Sisters, which is the Sisters Early College. We're still a little bit confused right now as to the status of that particular school. It is our impression that the Sisters attorney believes that the Sisters Early College as well as Sisters All Prep are the same school. They're not. They have two separate charters. And we're a little confused as to which way to go on that particular one. In terms of commingling, we have, and that's a big issue, clearly, and we understand that. We have directed the auditors, and we have had the business managers of several of our charter schools to direct the auditors to specifically look for those issues. And then, during this auditing process, and audits can't be done soon enough at this point for us, but we're told that it'll be done at the start of March. But our business managers specifically called, asked the auditors, hey, is there any indication so far from what you're doing, because they're at the last stages of this whole thing, that might be the case? And the answer has been pretty clear that no. that's not. Now,
Mr. King, would you explain a little bit about what you meant when you said in the board meeting that if you merged them together, you could use the funds from the one school to the shifting around? What were you referencing? And is there some context for that?
Yes, absolutely. Let me give you a full context for that. It used to be we had what's called narrative notes for a board meeting, and unfortunately when you have narrative notes for a board meeting, it's hard to interpret what actually is being said. In this case, that was clear. We can help. Let's say that we had SCAFA, which is the Small Arts Academy, and as Cindy noted, you are allowed to contract back and forth for teacher time and for administrative time, and one of the ways you can help a school is by having the contract for, say, a principal be weighted towards the All-Prep Academy. Now, in a lot of ways, it's just very appropriate because the All-Prep has five times as many kids in it. And so by doing that, it saves obviously it saves SCAFA some money. And so that's an appropriate way to do that. The other thing you can do is, since they share facilities, and All-Prep is five times the size in terms of student numbers, since they share facilities, you can weight the leasing appropriately from the SCAFA into the All-Prep, since they have the same spots there. And so I really think that was taken out of context in terms of what we were trying to do, what we're trying to say. There are ways to help out another charter if you're sharing things with them. That doesn't mean you're moving money necessarily from one to the other. And I think you'll find in the audits, and I think people have already confirmed that that's going to show to be true, that we're okay in that regard.
Thank you. And you have about two more minutes to wrap up. Are there burning questions before we lose Mr. King?
I do have a burning question.
Yes.
Just
sure.
To follow up before about the way that you are processing or interpreting the 50-50 rule in Sisters, the decision to transfer the students out, was that to be in compliance with the 50-50 rule?
No.
So maybe you could just explain.
I appreciate that opportunity. Thanks. In fact, I appreciate that question as well. I'll be honest with you. I completely misinterpreted what the sister school board was saying to me during a presentation. It was my understanding that they were saying to me they would not support the hybrid model that we had, and we had a little less than 100 kids that were clearly in a hybrid model. And we went into a mode of, holy cow, what are we going to do at this point? Because we have all these kids that we felt, me specifically, but I had other folks there as well, were not going to be supported in this model. And so we were in a situation, well, we got to get them into a school in which they're going to be supported, clearly. And that became a real issue for us. In hindsight, I thought we had more time, and at that point we were under a pretty big time crunch, but if I thought we had more time, clearly it would have been nice to go to each of the board members, well, to get another board meeting or a special board meeting or something to clarify what it is they meant at that point. But we thought we heard something pretty clearly. Evidently, that was not the case.
And did you contact each of those families before you transferred them?
The very next morning after that board meeting, we got a group of all of our admin together. I'll be honest with you, we were a little bit, I don't know if panic's the word, but certainly anxious, because we had 100 kids that were in a school district we didn't think was going to be supporting that type of education. And so since our teachers have to contact our kids daily, that sort of contact isn't as hard as one might think. I mean, we're required to do that anyway. And so all it was a matter of is telling our administrators to say to the teachers, hey, we got to let people know, particularly these folks know, that we are in a situation where currently we don't believe they're going to be supported and we're going to have to move them.
Ms. Baer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am so sorry. I do need to go. I have to do a couple things right before we hit the floor, so I do need to leave now. And as I leave here, I just remind myself that what I've heard today is a lot of allegations that we haven't seen substantiated or proof of, and I think that's very important as at least I leave this room that I remember those things, and this is certainly an ongoing issue, but we have lots of statements sitting out there now, and I think it's important for us to remember that that's what we've heard is people's statements. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And with that, we are going to close. I would urge everyone to read carefully the responses from the districts. I did study them carefully last night, met with the department. I think that clearly there is more work to be done. I think it's very clear that whether the intentions are good intentions or I don't believe that there are any bad intentions, there are clearly some problems and some challenges which were acknowledged in all of the letters, particularly around the transfer of students. I'm very concerned about the idea of commingling. We'll look forward to hearing more from the department. I think the issue is not charter schools and are charter schools not a good thing. I mean, there's all sorts of wonderful opportunities that come to us through charter schools. The issue is when we're looking at state school funds, making sure that all of the laws are followed, regardless of the intentions. That liberal interpretation of the law is one thing, and intentionally skirting the law is another. And I think we have yet to see what the issue is here, but clearly there are a lot of concerns. We did have a short amount of time, but it was very important to bring the department forward with this official letter that went forward and to have on the record where it was that these concerns were coming from, a concerned citizen, a school board that is in the process of serving notice to terminate a charter, and to give Mr. King the opportunity to respond. So we will be hearing more about this in the future, and I thank you all for coming today.
Thank you, Chair.
And the House Committee on Education is adjourned.